All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to switch focus a little bit from simply talking about the markets and metals and a lot of the technical outlooks that we have gotten for the first part of this weekend show, as we are now chatting with Brian Lenny, founder and editor of the Junior Stock Review website, also writes a premium newsletter. We're going to dive a bit more into one key characteristic to consider when assessing juniors, majors, really any resource company. That term is jurisdictional risk. So where the asset is located for any company that you're thinking of investing in. Now, Brian just went and rejigged his top five recommendations or stocks that he likes in the junior space. And this is what got us thinking about jurisdictional risk, because I believe, Brian, you had a couple questions come in from your subscribers saying, how do you weigh jurisdictional risk when you do outline your top stock? So when we talk about jurisdictional risk, we always talk about kind of the negatives. And a lot of people shy away from whether it's West Africa, whether it's South America, whether it's even California in the U.S. There are a number of jurisdictions that do have kind of a negative indentation in terms of not being able to get stuff done. Brian, let's start off high level here. How much importance do you put on jurisdictional risk?
Thanks for having me, Corey. Jurisdictional risk is a big component of the analysis I do for any company. Jurisdictional risk is very real. With that said, I think jurisdictional risk, you know, can also bring opportunity. You know, there's situations where a country's reputation maybe doesn't necessarily represent what's going on in the country at a given moment. And at those times, I think that those discounts that the market gives certain companies are great opportunities. And I think there's a number of countries out there right now that present good opportunity for investors that, you know, first, you know, they understand the jurisdictional risks that are associated with that country, but then also are able to take a look at the company in general and say, okay, it's worth, you know, X amount of dollars, and this is what the actual price the market's giving it. And if that price to value ratio is in the right, you know, realm of whatever your specific specs are, and you're comfortable with the jurisdictional risk and where that country is at the moment, I think those are opportunities, and those are opportunities on how you can make a lot of money. And I have in the past, and I plan to in the future. And like you said, I did some rejigging with the top five and a couple of the questions that were posed, because, you know, one company in particular in the top five is located in West Africa, particularly Ivory Coast. And so the reader wanted to kind of understand why I was comfortable with Ivory Coast. And so it spurred this kind of 2-week expose on jurisdictional risk. And I talked about why, you know, I think that it's opportunity in Ivory Coast right now. While there's always risk, the opportunity to me is right. And I think that, you know, I'm talking about Montage Gold here. And I think that that's going to be a company that is going to be a success for the portfolio in the end.
Brian, it's interesting to get into this topic of jurisdiction risk, because after over a decade in the space myself, and as someone that invests in West Africa, I'm always interested in how certain people will only invest in, let's say, North American companies, and they shun all the whole continent of Africa as if it's one uniform blob. And the reality is, investing in South Africa in a platinum mine is totally different than investing in copper or cobalt in the Congo or in Eritrea. You know, when there was NEVSUN was operating there, and that's totally different than West Africa. And all of the countries in West Africa are different, even down to the local level. And there's a lot of success stories in West Africa, but they're often trading at a discount. So you brought up Montage in Ivory Coast, but the reality is they've got about 4 million ounces of gold. They've got a massive development project. And if that was in Canada, it would be valued probably at 5 or 6 times where it is now. So are there times where you just see jurisdiction risk has been overweighted to the downside, and it presents a compelling value proposition for investors that see what the assets are in the ground?
Oh, definitely. And again, like Montage is a really good example of that. But there's a number like Ivory Coast. I think that Ghana is probably underrated, especially when you put in perspective of how many senior mining companies operate out of Ghana, and how much gold is actually produced out of that country on a given year. Like it's a top 10 producer in the world for gold. And I think, you know, people miss that. Obviously, the country is very important to the global gold supply, and it's very important to some of the biggest mining companies in the world. Newmont, I think, has around 15% of their operations or gold production comes out of Ghana. So obviously, you know, it's an important country, and even though there are risks, you know, the risks are real. That's one thing I don't want to you know, understate, is the fact that the jurisdictional risk is real. Like things can happen. We saw Burkina Faso. Things have been brewing in the north of Burkina Faso for a number of years. I can remember a couple of years ago looking at a few different companies in Burkina and kind of shying away because of what was going on in the north. And you know, lo and behold, last week we see a military coup, and you know, maybe or maybe not, that'll kind of fix things in within the country. But there are some specific things about Burkina that I think add to the chaos that sometimes arises there. And but I still wouldn't, you know, besides not probably investing in the heart of the north of Burkina, I wouldn't shy away from investing in the right story in Burkina Faso if the price to value was there in my favor. So like I said, you need to understand what's going on in those countries, and it can change on a dime. But if you're able to have maybe a longer time horizon and can kind of jive with some chaos, you know, here and there, I do think that there's opportunity, like you said. And a lot of the times, like in Ivory Coast right now, I think the country is very stable. And I think that larger mining companies are looking to expand operations, especially the ones that are already operating there.
So I think one key thing to touch on here, and you've kind of alluded to it, is that, look, companies or jurisdictions do carry this risk, and you're not playing these companies because you think jurisdictional risk will wane. You're playing these companies because you like the asset and you don't think that the jurisdiction is so bad that essentially the asset is going to get simply taken away from the company. Is that fair to summarize it that way?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And that's, yeah, the fundamentals of the company have to are first and foremost. And you know, the value has to be there. You know, you have to see that as like a top tier project. Like, I don't think you want to go into some of the riskier or the termed or viewed riskier jurisdictions for marginal projects necessarily. Like, I think that could be the recipe for disaster, because those projects typically aren't going to bring you money unless the market is rocking. And I mean, like in a bull type mentality, meaning all boats are sort of rising. And you know, I don't, for anybody who's been a resource sector investor for long enough, they know that the we're typically in a sideways or bear market, you know, most of the time, or else most of the time I've been an investor. So you need to stick to those top companies and look for deposits that are, you know, top tier. It doesn't, I'm not going to use the term world class because it is overused, but you want to look for top tier projects. Going back to Montage, it's a company we talked to before. Their production profile puts them, you know, head and shoulders above, you know, a lot of juniors out there. And I think that's what senior mining companies are going to be looking for, you know, those 150,000, 200,000 ounce per year production capacities. And, you know, all the other things align with it too. But, you know, that's kind of what I think separates it from the rest of the crowd and, you know, puts it in that upper echelon. And that's the kind of stuff I think that if you're going to take some risk, that's what you're going to look for. Like, the reason why people go to Congo is, like, look what Friedland's done with Ivanhoe in Congo. You know, Kamoa-Kakula is some of the highest grade that we've seen, like these multiple percent copper deposits, Platte Reef deposits. Like, these things aren't found around the world. These are top tier, and in that realm, world class type of deposits. People are should be or I should say should be, but you should look at taking risk for world class deposits, because at some point, you know, these things are going to be developed. And that's what a guy like Friedland has done, and he bought the thing on the cheap. Another great example, and it was the example I used back when I did a presentation at PDAC in the Sunday Letter Writer presentations on Ecuador. You look for those bottoms when sentiment is the worst in these countries. Like Ecuador is the example I used. And to me, the bottom was marked when Kinross sold Fruta del Norte to Lundin Mining for $250 million. That's 80% off the sticker. It's 80% off the $1.2 billion they paid Aurelian when they bought it. And, you know, if you want to compare more quantitative numbers, if you look at the Fraser Index, if you go back and you look at that, I think it's 2012 or something like that when they sold it, you looked at the Ecuador Fraser Index, that's when it bottomed itself. And then you saw it ramp back up. You know, Castillo got bumped out as president. They brought in a new maybe center right or right wing, however you want to look at it. But things started to change and they got rid of the windfall tax. And then you saw a huge influx of money. So the Lundin started it off. But then you saw BHP, Newcrest. I think Anglo American came in there with a deal, the JV. So you saw a few hundred million dollars get pushed into the country as things started to change. That ramp up and flow of cash is stuff that you want to look for a change in overall sentiment in a country. And then if you can find a top tier junior that fits your risk criteria and you know has a good outlook, then I think that those discounts to value are the positions you want to take. And the one thing I'll say, and you said it in your comment, you know, these jurisdictions never really change, in my view. There's just periods of time where they become more attractive. And those are the times you want to take advantage of.
Yeah, Brian, you make some great points there. And I just want to quickly contrast the West African jurisdictions to the South American jurisdictions to the point you're making. You brought up Burkina Faso, and there's so much worry about the northern side of the country. But it should also be pointed out that so many investors in North American stocks are waiting for their prize stock to be taken over by the big boys. But look at what happened in Burkina Faso just in the last few years. We've seen Griffin Minerals taken over. We've seen True Gold taken over. We've seen Teranga taken over. We've seen Simafo taken over. We've seen Roxgold taken over, all in Burkina Faso, the quote unquote risky place. Then why in the world are there so many takeovers there? And I was in several of those takeovers where there was amazing premiums to be made. And the sentiment couldn't be worse towards the country. And then you think about countries like Peru and Chile that are celebrated as longtime copper and longtime base metals producers. And just this week, Chile talked about nationalizing its copper and lithium mines. Peru has a very far left political person in there that's potentially going to tax the crap out of the companies that are in there. And a lot of the projects are getting blocked by local groups. Venezuela is a basket case. Argentina has currency issues. Ecuador is very cyclical, like you mentioned. So when you compare these jurisdictions, sometimes there's a favor given to one because of the history. But at the same time, that doesn't stop the majors from going in and buying quality projects when they see quality.
Oh, you're absolutely, you hit the nail on the head. And you know, I think that's what first and foremost, everybody has to do their homework. You've obviously done it because you've rhymed off some very good points and comparisons. Yeah, it's funny how the market, I would say, does tend to favor probably South America over Africa in general, not only just West Africa. Yet, if you look at the flow of money in senior mining companies, at least in the gold sector, you're right. West Africa has probably seen much more money inflow and much more action on the M&A front than we've seen in South America. And, you know, honestly, I think the more I've studied the South American countries and really just started in looking at West Africa. But, you know, I do see trouble in South America on the horizon. I think there's some troubling trends, and Chile and Peru are, you know, have gone from the number one ranked countries within South America to probably near the bottom of many people's lists. Now, we'll see where that all goes, because I think there's something to say for, you know, in Chile, for instance, besides this latest news, they talk about nationalization, which would be absolutely horrible. But a lot of people, investors that I know, they say that they won't cook the golden goose, meaning, you know, the copper is really what keeps Chile's economy pumping and up amongst the best in South America. So if they killed that, what would they do? Now, I tend to agree. I think that, you know, most sensible governments aren't going to want to destroy that, but it sounds like they could go to the extreme and nationalize it, and that it would be terrible, and that would be my worst fear of Chile realized. And honestly, that's one of the reasons why I sold the Chilean company last year, was because when they start talking about rewriting a constitution, this is serious stuff. And so we'll see where that goes, but I completely agree with you. there is a disconnect. And I think that mostly has to do with people doing their homework. It has more to do with people reading headlines and then creating a judgment or a thought in their head rather than actually looking at what's going on. And honestly, I think investors right now, just go take a look at the gold production out of Ghana. Ghana is very important to the senior mining companies. And I think it's going to continue to be that way. And I think the disconnect is opportunity for the investors that do their homework and have a sensible thought on what the risks are and what the price to value ratio is on the specific company that they want to invest in.
All right. Final quick question here, Brian. We hear a lot about the Fraser rankings, the Fraser Institute rankings on jurisdiction when it comes to mining. We hear a lot about it from companies in, let's say, Nevada, because Nevada's always ranked really high. So they're saying Fraser Institute always ranks this as one of the highest or the best places to be as a mining company. Do you use these rankings at all, driving more down to some of these somewhat more riskier jurisdictions as a barometer for interest and where the country is going?
Generally speaking, no. In the last couple of years, I haven't used them at all. If you go back to earlier in my career as a full-time investor, yeah, I would pay more attention to the rankings. But more and more, I do my own research and come up with my own idea of what I'm dealing with. Like I said, I try to look at the culture of the society, the government, the geography of the country, the infrastructure present in it, and then timing and cash flow into the countries. And that's kind of why I have come up with my own sort of ranking. At this moment, I don't quantify it, but I do look at those five or six components and try to get an idea of what I think the country is all about. But, and I think that's what you have to do, because there's holes. When you try to quantify something as big as jurisdictional risk, there's too many holes. And the other side to it is each company is so different. Like I said, the underlying fundamentals of the company, I think, are first and foremost. And then you look at those other kind of components, if you maybe the more qualitative, like jurisdictional risk, and see how that threads in with that price to value proposition. That's just the way I go about it. I'm sure there's people that do it differently, but I've had success doing it the way I do it.
All right, Brian, really appreciate you taking time on this weekend show. And hey, we appreciate all of you for tuning in throughout this weekend show. Again, be sure to please go back, listen to the daily editorials that we posted this week, as well as the company updates. And feel free to email us at any time. My email is fleck@kereport.com. Shad's email is shad@kereport.com. Please share with us your thoughts on the markets and any companies that you're interested in or would like us to get some of your questions answered for you. We are here to help and happy to help in any way we can. Brian, thank you again for your time. Everybody, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks for having me, Corey.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.